Catholic commentary.
You're returning a service. What do you want to speak to?
Spiritual warfare.
AOM clear, see no
transport. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Where I can help.
Jesus 911.
Jesus 911 on Virtue Most Powerful Radio. My name is Ruben Nava. My partner, Jesse Romero. We make up a two-man car. We're at 10-8, giving you some Catholic commentary and some briefing. Good morning, Jesse.
Reporting for duty, sir. Ruben, we're called to be great saints, so every single day God gives us the opportunity to live here on planet Earth, which is enemy territory, and we're called to be on this great sabotage mission to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ into every nation and every human heart to the extent that we're able.
That's right. That's right. Hey, Jess, today we're going to talk about something that's, as a Catholic, it kind of shames us, and but at the same token, we don't like talking about negative things about the church, but it's out there, and it's best that we let the people know that this is what's going on. This is why the church is in the state it is, and we're going to be talking about the McCarrick Report and an article that was written that evades the issue of pervasive homosexuality in the Catholic clergy.
Well, let's jump right into it. But let me just mention before we talk about the article that it definitely is a strategy of Satan to try to shame the one true church of Jesus Christ, the Catholic Church, by one of the worst sins out there. In fact, the Catechism calls this sin one of the four sins that cry to heaven, and that's called the sin of sodomy. And this is what Satan has put smack dab in the middle of the Catholic Church, one of the four most deadly sins. And again, he's done this in times past, Reuben. He did this with Sodom and Gomorrah, where God saw fit to destroy an entire two cities because there was just complete sexual debauchery, complete disorder, and complete just the embrace of profanity and what's unclean. And it's Sister Lucia said that in the last days and times that the devil would go after marriage and family. And that's what we're seeing right now, because bishops and priests are part of the family of God, and they're our spiritual fathers. And so he's went after them with a vengeance. And this has been predicted by many Marian apparitions that are approved. Akita Japan, Our Lady of Good Success, Our Lady of La Salette, and some others.
That's right. So the report here highlights that the Vatican downplayed McCarrick's homosexual misconduct and the grooming behaviors with adult clergy and seminarians and the influence of a clerical gay lobby in the covering up of his moral crimes. But one of the more disturbing and key aspects revealed by the McCarrick report is how the now laicized former cardinal, Archbishop of Washington's homosexual grooming of seminarians resulted in only light punishments, while at the same time, he reached the highest ranks of the church. The 450-page report, officially titled Report on the Holy See's Institutional Knowledge and Decision-Making Related to Former Cardinal Theodore Edgar McCarrick, is the fruit of a two-year Vatican Secretary of State investigation into archival documents and 90 interviews regarding the former cardinal.
Ruben, I'll tell you why I think that the report is flawed. Because just like right now we're finding out that there's a deep state in the FBI and the CIA, there's also a deep state in the church. And so can you imagine, these are friends of Cardinal McCarrick, who this guy was, this guy had millions of dollars at his disposal, McCarrick, as a result of the Papal Foundation. And just like in politics, certain people, their silence has been bought. And this is why this report is very soft on McCarrick, because I have no doubt that a lot of the people that were part of this commission to investigate, they owed him favors, if you know what I mean.
Yep, they did. And their desire to move up the ranks was so great that they would, they lost their compass, their moral compass.
Yep.
So the last thing I'll say here is it recounts many incidences of McCarrick's abusing seminarians and young priests, which often included inappropriate touching and sharing beds with them, although McCarrick himself denied any sexual activity took place. Yeah, right. Come on.
Let me continue. It
Go
says,
ahead.
Okay, there's two bishops that witnessed for themselves the inappropriate activity. One is Bishop James McHugh of Camden, New Jersey, and the second Bishop John Smith of Trenton, New Jersey. They were present at a dinner in 1990 when McCarrick started physically abusing a young cleric by groping him. Also present was Monsignor Dominic Bottino, a diocesan tribunal judge and hospital chaplain in the Diocese of Camden, New Jersey, who was interviewed for the McCarrick investigation. So, Bishop McHugh and Bishop Smith, both of whom have now died and went to their judgment, I hope they confessed the fact that they didn't divulge this sin that they knew about. They saw what was happening. And Monsignor Bottino, he said in the report's interview, quote, Bishop McHugh then immediately and abruptly stood up in a sort of panic and said, we have to leave, close quote. Monsignor Bottino recalled.
Hey Jesse, what just sticks out to me is that McCarrick felt comfortable enough to do that in front of these other priests, in front of these other bishops. So,
and my reason for that is because I think he had them dirty. What I mean by that is, again, McCarrick was known to carry white envelopes in his breast pocket with tens of thousands of dollars that he would give away, just like Santa Claus, to bishops and cardinals, especially, you know, from poor third world countries. And he was able to buy their silence. This is something that's very well known amongst the Roman Curia, that McCarrick, basically, he was this endless treasure trough. And so people wanted to be nice with him because they wanted a nice little stipend, for their silence. And so once again, this is what the guy did, Ruben. Just like in politics, he bought their silence.
Yeah, he was able to get donations and raise money like no other. So,
yep. Yeah, they say he's the greatest fundraiser that the church has ever had.
Yeah. And, you know, to think that, you know, police get a bad rap for not intervening when their partner steps out of line. But how much more should a man of the cloth be required to do the right
thing?
Oh, man.
And, Ruben, and that's why St. John Vianney, by the way, who's the patron saint of parish priests, look at this one quote that he says. He goes, quote, a priest goes to heaven or a priest goes to hell with 1,000 people behind him.
Mm, I've read that, yeah.
You know what that means, basically, because a priest is a general. He's a general of the church militant. So his words and his conduct are either leading thousands of people behind him to heaven or thousands of people behind him to hell. Mm. And I'm telling you, McCarrick and all these bishops, this is called the sin of omission, what these bishops and Monsignor Bottino, it's basically they're covering their eyes. Hear no evil, see no evil, do no evil. Sorry, Jesus saw that you saw this and you cowered down because of whatever reason you were bought and paid for, or you were compromised sexually with pictures, or who knows. The fact of the matter is Bishop McHugh and Bishop Smith went to their judgment as cowards if they didn't confess and repent, because they had the power to remove Carrick back in 2000. But again, I'm quite sure that he probably bought their silence with a little nice donation to their personal bank account. And it goes back to what St. Paul says to Timothy, the love of money is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And then in 2000, by the Apostolic Nuncio, Archbishop Gabriel Montalvo, when asked to give factual information of any serious moral weaknesses shown by Archbishop McCarrick to judge if he was suitable to be appointed to Washington, D.C., Bishop McHugh denied witnessing improper behavior. Bishop Smith, for his part, advised the nuncio that he did not have any evidence of serious moral weakness shown by Archbishop McCarrick. Again, sins of omission. And then Dominican Father Boniface Ramsey wrote to Archbishop Montalvo in 2000, warning him of rumors he had heard concerning McCarrick's inappropriate conduct with seminarians, said he was shocked to learn that two bishops had witnessed McCarrick's abuse and then were not entirely frank about what they had seen. This isn't a question of rumors, but something evident to them, which they chose not to mention, he told the Register November 11th, and asked if, because of the culture that largely turned the other way regarding homosexual behavior, Father Ramsey said, that's part of it. And as a seminary professor in Newark, from 88 to 96, he said everybody knew that McCarrick was sleeping with seminarians, and nobody did anything. He was excused. He added that nobody ever heard of McCarrick touching anyone. It was just considered peculiar behavior on the part of the ordinary because he never touched anybody. It was reluctantly accepted. This is the old theory, just the duck theory. If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and walks like a duck, it must be a duck. You don't just do all these things just to have people laying in your bed. I mean, this guy had he was a deviant. So,
Ruben, and McCarrick has a shady past. He's part of the St. Gallen Mafia. He was a fatherless boy out in Europe and stuff. Good Catholic journalists have written that he was influenced by communists very early on. He went into seminary. He was a troubled child without a father and stuff, mm-hmm. and he was groomed by communists. That's the theory, the prevailing theory amongst people that have investigated the life of McCarrick. But the article goes on here. He basically shifts the blame. This whole commission is shifting the blame on Pope Benedict. The Holy See under Pope Francis is just throwing Pope Benedict under the bus. They figure he's an old man. He's not going to fight back. Nobody's going to listen to him. It says here, despite wide awareness of McCarrick's behavior with seminarians, which would normally be judged unacceptable, even if it was not homosexual grooming, little or no action was taken. We will continue. Okay, stick around. Up next, we'll keep talking more about the infiltration of the church, the homosexual heresy that's inside the church. Jesus 911, two-man car. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
We are back, Jesus 911, two-man car, 10-8, and we are open for calls, by the way. So we're discussing this McCarrick report and how it was flawed, and what it leaves out is alarming. And so we're covering that right now. And this McCarrick, he was grooming seminarians, and he was... The McCarrick report confirms that only basic restrictions not to travel and make public appearances were advised by Pope Benedict the 16th in the 2000s after McCarrick had retired as the Archbishop of Washington. And I'll point out that in Washington, he was the one who was picking the bishops, the Catholic bishops here.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a bad apple, and what he's going to do, he's going to surround himself with other like-minded people so that it keeps everything hush-hush. And that was the downfall of putting him in that position.
Ruben, I remember when I lived in Southern California, I would talk to a lot of my seminarian friends that went to St. John's Seminary. McCarrick affected the whole country because I know at St. John's Seminary for decades, good priests would tell me, they would ask you certain questions, and if you didn't give the liberal progressive response, you'd be booted out of St. John's Seminary. And they said one of the things that was very open, that if you actually said that you thought that homosexuality was wrong as a young seminarian during the interview by the panel of progressives that were running St. John's when I was living out there, you would not be allowed to come into seminary. They would said, no, you're not fit for the priesthood. So McCarrick's homosexual behavior influenced the entire country because virtually every seminary was infected with this homosexual cabal and also this specific targeting of young men who were homosexual to the priesthood. Mm-hmm. So he had national ramification. And I would even say that his ramifications continue even in the Roman Curia, because right now this report says it and many others that in the Vatican itself, probably about 30% of the people in the Roman Curia are homosexuals. In fact, this came out in a report from Father Darius Oko, who was commissioned by Pope Benedict to do a report, a study on how bad the homosexual problem was in the church. And Father Darius Oko gave Pope Benedict a 300-page dossier. It's on the internet. It's called Homo Heresy by Father Darius Oko. And in there, I mean, it's a very academic clinical type report that he wrote. It's like for a PhD. And he says that probably about 30 to 40% of the people right now in the Vatican are practicing homosexuals. They have websites, they have Facebook accounts, they meet up in different rooms and stuff, and it's very organized. Yeah, Ruben, this is a diabolical infiltration that Mother Mary spoke about in many Marian apparitions, such as, again, Our Lady of Good Success, Our Lady of La Salette, and Our Lady of Akita, Japan.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, so they found one credible allegation that McCarrick had abused a minor, and then the report focuses almost exclusively on the aspect while his homosexual behavior with adults it's hardly even mentioned. It's like, oh, that's acceptable. Although the alarm was raised about such abuse, there were no proven facts. Andrea Tortoglioni says that he was the editor director of the Vatican's Dicastery of Communication. And then there was a psychiatrist, Richard Fitzgibbons, which he took issue with the report's executive summary found in the body of the document. He said that contrary to that summary, significant credible evidence has been presented in this report from laity, seminarians, priests, and members of the hierarchy that Theodore McCarrick engaged regularly, repeatedly, in intense grooming behaviors and physical boundary crossing of adolescent males and seminarians. Jesse, how many people lost their vocation because of, as a result of this? You know, people have walked away from it.
What he did, Ruben, is people have committed spiritual suicide as a result of being, you know, being a victim of the sexual predator who was the successor of the apostles. And the article that I'm telling you about, again, by Father Dariusz Oko of Poland, he's a PhD, he's a priest, he's actually suggested in his report that about 50% of the bishops in the U.S. are homosexual. And he says that there's a Father Dariusz Oko, an Orthodox priest, says that there's a huge homosexual underground in the Catholic Church. And again, you can read the full story of this homosexual infiltration by, in fact, he came out with a new book, Father Dariusz Oko. He's probably wearing a bulletproof vest everywhere he goes, Ruben. His new book is called Exposing the Gay Mafia. Exposing the Gay Mafia. He's a Polish Catholic priest. He had a team of young priests that investigated the Vatican, the church at large, as to how far the homosexual infiltration extended. And he was commissioned by Pope Benedict XVI. Pope Benedict XVI, after reading his 300-page dossier, two or three months after, he resigned. It was so disheartening to him to see this. I'm sure he knew that it was around, but to the extent that we had it, I think it even surprised both Benedict that he just basically he just lost his will to fight this, thinking that he was too old and weak to fight against this cabal. It's much like what Trump is going through right now, Ruben. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, everything has already been put in place for decades to fight against Trump, and everything was already put in decades ago to fight against any bishop that would have a pope that would have Orthodox leanings.
That's right, Jesse. And Father, I think his first name is John, Father John O'Sullivan. He was talking about this issue way back when in the, early 2000s and the 1990s. And he was saying that we don't have a problem with lack of vocations to the priesthood. We have a problem with the good boys are not being chosen because they don't.
Yeah.
They're not aligned with this agenda here. So they, what do you do? I pray my rosary daily. I go to daily mass. Okay, well, how do you feel about the homosexuals? If they're not tolerant, boom, they're gone. So it's so Father Sullivan, John O'Sullivan, was saying, no, it's not that we're these people aren't applying. They're just not getting in. They're not letting them come into the seminary. Yeah. So.
They're handpicking the ones that have homosexual proclivities.
That's right. And what did Cardinal Raymond Burke say? He was the prefect emeritus of the Apostolic Signatura, told the Register on November 12th, that as far as he was concerned, canonical action should have been taken long ago. Even though there were these strong accusations, persistent rumors about this kind of activity, There was never a proper canonical investigation to get to the truth of the situation. And he says, with the greatest respect for Benedict XVI, he asked him, McCarrick, to discipline himself. But if he had information that was significant enough, there should have been canonical process and a formal act. And then, go ahead.
Yeah, here's my take. Let me just mention, if this is true, and I'm just going to take Cardinal Raymond Burke at his word, then this was a huge oversight on Pope Benedict's part. Why? Why am I saying that? Because if Pope Benedict knew that McCarrick he's already demonstrated these strong proclivities to live a disordered and unclean homosexual life, how are you going to ask him to discipline himself? That's the problem. He can't. He has no self-control because he has a disordered lust for money and for sexual power over young men. So if that's true, once again, that's why we have what's called the sacrament of confession, and popes need to go as well, because again, sometimes they sin by omission, Ruben.
Yeah, but going to what the church, the canonical process for resolution of allegations of sexual abuse of minors by priests and deacons, it has always gone to the CDF, Jesse. The CDF is the one who opens the case on him, and the Pope isn't the one who makes that determination,
which used to be called the Holy Office.
Yes, yeah,
the Holy Office.
The Holy Office, and that's where Benedict came from. You know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you want to go ahead?
All I could say is, thanks be to God for the sacrament of confession, because I'm telling you, Ruben, none of us would be going to heaven. None of us would be going. And I mean, these are huge oversights. These are not like, oh, okay, you know, this guy just, you know, it's a little vanilla error. You know, he took a piece of bubble gum from the liquor store and stuffed it in his pocket. Now, these are huge things that have had huge ramifications for the one true church of Jesus Christ. And so many people have been wounded as a result of this. Let me continue. Riccardo Cassioli, editor of the Italian Catholic Daily newspaper, noted that in practice, what the findings of the McCarrick report show is that immoral behavior with adults, while certainly not a good thing, is, however, something in the end that is tolerated. Mm-hmm. He added that the real alarm that carries penalties is only if one abused is a minor. I'm going to agree with something there, Ruben. If a priest has a misstep with a woman, I don't think that should be the end of his priest. I mean, I think he should be doing penance and prayer, and he should go to a monastery for a while, and he needs to definitely, his intellect, yep, and his will need to be properly ordered by a life of faith, prayer, and penance, and a monastic life for maybe a couple of years. Because sinning with a woman, that's not disordered. That's immoral. That's unlawful. That's a mortal sin because it's a breach of your state in life as a priest, but it's sinning according to nature, male and female. Now, homosexual sex, Ruben, these people should be thrown out as soon as possible because it shows that there's a disorder in their intellect, a disorder in their will. There's such a darkness that somebody like this cannot be given a Roman collar and put in a position of authority. He's already demonstrated that he has poor judgment.
That's right. Apparently, it's gone by the wayside, Jesse. So, what else does it say?
Here's the meat of what Riccardo Cassioli says. He says that they deliberately ignored in the McCarrick affair was that which permitted his irresistible rise. So there's a system of power, also known as the gay lobby, which favors the appointment and career of bishops with certain characteristics. That's it. He just nailed it. This is what's called the gay mafia, the lavender mafia in the church. It was spoken of like 20 years ago by Michael Rose, who wrote a book, Goodbye, Good Men. And in his comments to the Register, a cardinal who spoke on condition of anonymity, said, "The root of the problem with the McCarrick scandal is homosexuality. A homosexual act with young seminarians is a mortal sin. It's a crime in the ecclesiastical sense because it's destroying the faith of these young people and their relationship with God and the credibility of the Catholic Church."
That's right. And he argued that the Vatican doesn't have in mind the real problem, which is that 80% of clerical sexual abuse is perpetrated by homosexuals, that the victims are not usually children, but post-pubescent males. He recalled last year's in the three-day Vatican summit on clerical abuse. The topic of homosexuality was completely absent during the meeting opening day, and that the meeting leaders tried to avoid the subject, arguing that a subculture of homosexuality in seminaries had nothing to do with the sex abuse of minors. We'll finish this up on the other side of the break. I'm right back.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, we are back. Two-man car. Jesse, this reminds me of a story I heard once about some conquistadores who were, upon conquering the Aztec tribes, they learned of some hidden treasures of an Aztec warrior, and through a translator, let's just say Hernan Cortez, he asked the Aztec where his treasure was buried. He says, "Tell me where it's buried, or are we going to stick some reeds behind your fingernails, causing immense pain?" Ooh. And he says, "Oh, I'd rather die than to tell you where my treasure is buried." So they do that to him, put him in immense pain. Then they come back and say, "Hey, tell us where your treasure is buried. We're going to cut off your toes on your right foot." And he says, the translator tells him, and he says, "Tell him I'd rather die than to tell you where my treasure is buried." So they cut off his toes on his right foot. Now he's in, tremendous pain. And then they come again. "Hey, we're going to hang you upside down and beat you mercilessly if you don't tell us where your treasure is buried." And he says, "I would rather die than tell you where my treasure is buried." So they do that. And this guy's on the point of death now, you know. And so they come to him one more time. And through the translator, they ask him, "Tell him to tell us where the treasures, or we're gonna we're gonna burn him at the stake." So at this point, this Aztec warrior, he's given up, and he starts saying, "Oh, it's over the hill, along the riverbed, behind underneath a large tree." And so they looked at the translator and said, "What'd he say?" He says he'd rather die than to tell you where his treasure's buried. So the point and the moral of the story is that you don't give up information that's not to your benefit. This is what the church has been doing with the sexual scandal. They're not going to tell you anything that's going to be critical of them. That's the same thing they did, Jesse, with the third secret of Fatima. They told you what, just a portion of it. They didn't give you the full third secret because it was looked bad. The church was going to look bad behind it.
Yeah. Here's the theory behind that, which is a very sound theory, and they're very respected people hold to this theory. Very respected people, you know, holy cardinals and bishops. They say that the third secret was about exactly this: the modernist homosexual infiltration of the clergy, and that the past popes didn't want to scandalize the church any further. And so they basically just, you know, redacted the information that they were going to put out. So that's the theory, which is very plausible, Ruben, because as we see what we've entered into, I'm sure the Blessed Virgin Mary was already warning us about this. And the information just didn't get to us, I guess, because maybe prior popes and prior Roman Curia thought that we weren't mature enough to process that we were going to enter into a time of incredible infiltration amongst the clergy.
And I would say that this is the same thing that they're doing with Medjugorje, because of the coffers that it's filling up. Those Franciscans are making a ton of money over there with all the, you know, the people visiting.
Right. So. And now I will say this, that now some people have had experiences, a conversion. Oh, yeah. You know why that is? I'll tell you why. Because it's like going to a retreat or a conference. When you go somewhere where people are seeking God and holiness and purity of life, you're going to enter into basically a room or an area that's surrounded by prayer and by people singing to God and by people on their knees, by the sacramental confessions. And so all of that aroma, what I would call it, the aroma of Christ, that's going to cause something in the soul to have a conversion, despite the fact if the apparition was true or not. It's just because the situation lends itself to conversion because it's just basically a cauldron of prayer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I just want to mention this report that this psychiatrist did, and he reported it back in the 90s, and it was supposed to have been entered into this report on McCarrick. And this priest, he's not divulging the confidence of this priest, but because he was treating some of these people, these priests, with, you know, problems. And so the psychiatrist says that McCarrick, he had inappropriate grooming behaviors on McCarrick toward a seminarian who he was treating. And it says the history on this former seminarian patient given for the McCarrick report, but McCarrick in the 90s invited the seminarian out to dinner in Manhattan at a restaurant where they met several other men. The seminarian felt very anxious at the table because he suspected these individuals might have criminal connections. Why? He wondered, is an archbishop meeting with these men? And then after dinner, he was informed that they would not return to the seminary, but would instead stay in a Manhattan in McCarrick's apartment. When he discovered that it was one-bedroom apartment, he became very anxious. McCarrick gave him pajamas to wear that night. Although nothing happened sexually, the seminarian had a restless night because he thought he was being groomed for later sexual activity. Not long after that night, the seminarian received a note from McCarrick who identified himself, in which he stated that one of the men they had at dinner with them had been shot and killed shortly thereafter. McCarrick wrote, "Thank God we didn't go to dinner on Saturday night. We'd have been in the middle of a gangland rubout." In a subsequent note, McCarrick wrote, "You stick with your uncle and you'll really meet some exciting people." In a final note, he wrote, "We have an almost full house at McCarrick's shore home, and by tomorrow the couches and maybe the floor will be taken, but we would have made room even for a big guy like you." In a sign of possible desperation, he added, "P.S., do you even get my letters?" So the psychiatrist is thinking, man, they can't prove that this guy got whacked, but it could be a way of him saying, "Hey, look, you're going to go along with the process here, or I know guys in high places that could take you out." So he's instilling fear in these seminarians. That's a plausible explanation.
Right. And also, Ruben, McCarrick was very good friends with Obama, with the Bidens, with the Clintons. So he's connected with communist China. Mm-hmm. He's connected with some people that are treacherous and people that wouldn't think twice about wiping somebody out. And so McCarrick, he was connected with all the wrong people. And the end of this article, it says this. Philip Lawler from the editor of the Catholic World News. The question regarding whether McCarrick is protected by a homosexual network is one of the two key unanswered questions in the report. And the other question is how he shaped the Vatican policy and the U.S. hierarchy. Philip Lawler told the Register that he believed that the McCarrick report was prepared, quote, in order to relieve public pressure without answering the questions that were raised by the scandal. In other words, here it is, lay people. Here's our findings after a couple of years. Now shut up and go away and leave us alone. That's exactly what Philip Lawler is saying would happen. It also says here, Philip Lawler added that the main villain of the report, apart from McCarrick, is the whistleblower, Archbishop Carlo Vigano, whose revelations put those questions in the forefront. I think his name appears 306 times in the McCarrick report. So Philip Lawler believes that this report is, quote, another indication that the Vatican under current leadership has no intention of addressing those questions, again, of the homosexual mafia within inside the church, Ruben.
Yep, that's true.
Well, let me just mention one thing, just for those people that say, "Oh, no, I got to leave the church. This is horrible. This is horrible what's happening." Here's what I would just say. I, Jess Romero, am never going to leave Jesus Christ and his church because of a corrupt apostle. Even if all 11 or 12 are corrupt, I'm not leaving the Lord Jesus Christ, the way, the truth, and life, the only way to heaven, my Lord and Savior. I'm not leaving the Son of God for corrupt apostles. I don't care if all 12 of them are corrupt. Okay? The fact is, The Catholic Church is like Noah's Ark. Think about that. In Genesis chapter 6, if you were inside Noah's Ark, if you were Noah and his eight family members, you'd probably say, man, it's uncomfortable inside. It's crowded. It smells. There's a bunch of animals. Guess what? Kind of like the Catholic Church today, right?
Right.
Hey, but what's but if you jump off Noah's Ark, what's outside in the waters? There's shark-infested waters. It's a sea of chaos and confusion. You know what? I'd rather stick inside where it's smelly, it's crowded with a bunch of animals than jump into shark-infested waters, which is outside the Catholic Church.
That's right.
Nope, not me. I'm staying within the church. And this is exactly what we are. We are the New Testament Ark of Peter, or basically a type of the Ark of Noah.
Extra ecclesia nulla salus. You know,
that's
outside
right.
The church, there is no salvation. So let's switch gears.
Yeah, let's go, Ruben.
Let's go to another topic. The Theological Anthropology 101 is the title. And Father Harrison Airy, he wrote this article. And he's talking about a massive issue in the Western world at the moment concerns the question of gender. It's becoming increasingly in vogue to say that while your body may demonstrate you are male or female, it's rather your interior experience that truly determines whether you are a man or a woman. He says, well, there isn't anything specific.
Ruben, let me just mention one thing what you just read there.
Yeah.
I would just say liberals are always saying that they believe in science. I would say, no, they don't.
Yeah.
Liberals believe because you believe in science. Pull down your pants and look at your private parts and you know if you're male or female. Okay. So liberals don't believe in science. They believe in what suits their disordered, sinful lifestyles.
Amen.
That's my comment. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, well, there isn't anything specific to this issue within the Catechism of the Catholic Church.
I heard my wife laugh right now. She probably goes, I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, yeah. That wouldn't be the first time, Anita. A summary of various magisterial documents and theological reflection can give us some insight into how a person of faith should respond when confronted with this increasingly prevalent viewpoint. While the church can and does hold that the concept of gender and one's biological sex can be distinct, they are by no means separate from one another. The church teaches that the body is both instructive and integral to our identity as male and female. And this means that while some aspects of masculinity and femininity can find roots in culture more so than nature, there are essential qualities possessed specifically by a man and specifically by a woman. We're going to pick this up on the other side of the break. There's only two genders, ladies and gentlemen. Be right back.
Adam and Eve.
Not
Adam and Eve.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And we're talking about the Theological Anthropology 101 by Father Harrison Airy. And just to leave out the rest of that paragraph that he was talking about, gender then is rooted in the giftedness of our body, what it means to be a man and a woman, as distinct from the biological difference of male and female. It's deeply rooted in the gift of the body. To put this more simply, gender is only properly integrated when it takes its starting point in the gift of the body and its sexual difference. Go ahead, Jess.
Yeah, let me just jump in and mention something here. I think that they've come up with a term every time the world of medicine, which has been politicized, unfortunately, in many respects, every time there's a sin involved, they always try to cover it. Or anytime there's a defect or a vice or a disorder in the human person, which is a spiritual that comes from the soul, they try to mask it with some type of medical term. So they've come up, Ruben, with the term gender dysphoria. So what is gender dysphoria?
Yeah.
Here's a definition. A psychological condition marked by significant emotional distress and impairment in life functioning, caused by a lack of congruence between gender identity and sex assigned at birth, close quote. So the medical community calls the fact that you can't connect interiorly with what you are exteriorly They call that gender dysphoria. Okay, that's just a fancy way, Ruben, of trying to, as again, the world of medicine is very quick to change a vice or a human defect, and they try to mask it with some type of medical term. Here's what I would say. I'm going to go back to Saint Ignatius of Loyola, one of the great mystics of the Catholic Church. In his spiritual exercises, here's what he says about evil spirits and the way they're able to confuse thoughts. Okay? So I would, this whole gender dysphoria, I would say, nope. This is diabolical disorientation. Here's what Saint Ignatius of Loyola wrote, okay, back in the Middle Ages. He says, for people who close themselves off from God's grace, the good spirit, their guardian angel, disturbs and shakes them up. It stirs feelings of remorse and discontent. The purpose is to make the person unhappy with a simple way of life. On the other hand, evil spirits want people who close themselves off from God's grace to continue in their confusion and darkness. So the evil spirit tries to make them complacent, content, and satisfied with their distractions and pleasures. Very clear, Ruben. When you cut your... So I'm going to just break St. Ignatius of Loyola down into spiritual exercises. When you close yourself off, when you cut yourself off from sanctifying grace, God's grace, now evil spirits, they can make it quite easily to bring your mind into confusion and darkness. So now you love your sin. That's exactly what he's saying. So this whole gender confusion, Ruben, the origin is diabolical. Father Chad Ripperger, who's probably the foremost exorcist in the world right now, he says, ordinary diabolical influence includes confusion of the mind. Demons will make people confused, give them anxiety, fears, and deep depression. Here's Mexico's top exorcist, Father Mendoza Pantoja, from the Diocese of Mexico. He says, what the devil is interested in is to confuse us. To confuse us. And remember, let's not forget that Sister Lucia, who wrote a letter, a series of letters between 1969 and 1971 to Cardinal Caffara.
Yeah.
And time again, she used this word, Ruben, that we will enter into a time of, quote, diabolical disorientation. Diabolical disorientation. Cardinal Raymond Burke also says in an interview with LifeSite News, he said this, let me make this clear, that confusion is never a good thing. Confusion is the work of the devil. So going back to the article, Ruben, this whole thing about, I don't know if I'm a boy or I'm a girl. And now, so the medical community tries to mask it. He's got gender dysphoria. We got to have, you know, compassion with him. No, Ruben, they are diabolically disoriented and confused by Satan and his minions.
You know, Jesse, we've heard, I'm seeing videos of parents voicing this on their children. These kids are not even, you know, into puberty, and they're saying, oh, my daughter identifies as a boy. So they start training them and bringing them up as a boy and giving them hormone therapy and all these that
puberty blockers.
The kid is too young to know that, to know the difference. So that sin is on the parent, and it's happening
absolutely
more and more. Yeah. It's so disturbing. That should be child abuse. But
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, under the Obama administration, you know, he outlawed, you know, reparative therapy for, you know, counselors and psychologists, psychiatrists to try to help people out of their confusion. And he made it illegal. And I don't know if it's ever been repaired.
In many liberal states, the governors have made reparative therapy. Yeah. Is illegal for minors. If your son is a homosexual, you know, says I'm homosexual or lesbian, and they're under your, again, they're minors, they're under 18, mm-hmm. and you try to take them to a Catholic therapist or a Protestant therapist to for reparative therapy, it's against the law. I know in California it's against the law.
That's right.
And a few other states have also embraced it. Again, taking the authority of mom and dad away, the fourth commandment, honor your father and your mother, taking it away and giving it to the state. The state saying, no, your kid's a homosexual, and just that's the way it is, and just live with it.
Mm-hmm. The Catholic Church, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church in 2233, says every one man and woman should acknowledge and accept his sexual identity. Physical, moral, and spiritual difference and complementarity are oriented toward the goods of the marriage and the flourishing of family life. The harmony of the couple and of society depends in part on the way in which the complementarity needs and mutual support between the sexes are lived out. And in 2393, it says, by creating the human being, man and woman, God gives personal dignity equally to the one and the other. Each of them, man and woman, should acknowledge and accept his sexual identity. And even Pope Francis, he harped in on his exhortation to Amoris Laetitia, where he talked about the ideology of gender that denies the difference of reciprocity in nature and of man and a woman, and envisages a society without sexual differences. And just, you know, getting to the meat of it, he says it needs to be emphasized that biological sex and the sociocultural role of sex gender can be distinguished but not separated. It is one thing to be understanding of human weakness and complexities of life, and another to accept ideologies that attempt to sunder what are inseparable aspects of reality. Let us not fall into the sin of trying to replace the Creator. We are creatures and not omnipotent. Creation is prior to us, must be received as a gift. At the same time, we are called to protect our humanity, and this means, in the first place, accepting it and respecting it as it was created. So he got something. He got it right there, Jesse.
Ruben, also going back to the catechism, it also says, because a lot of times these people start having sex reassignment surgeries as a result of their gender dysphoria, you know, their psychological confusion. And look what the catechism says about the immorality of mutilating body parts. It's in 2296, the last sentence. It says, moreover, it is not morally admissible directly to bring about the disabling mutilation or death of a human being, even in order to delay the death of other persons. And so it's very clear that the church renders it immoral to directly disable or mutilate body parts. And that's exactly what people are doing. It's Frankenstein science, Ruben. It's not science based on reason and rational thought and based on natural law. It's Frankenstein science. Here's the last thing that I'll say. Exorcists will say that demons are able to cause what's called fractured thoughts in people. You'll see this like in cases of high level obsession or possession. You'll see that the person has fractured thoughts. What does that mean? It means that a demon's able, he's able to get a person by projecting thoughts. A demon is able to separate the thoughts of the person by projection, so the person can't distinguish, he or she can't distinguish between his or her own negative emotions and that negative self-talk from the demon's projected thoughts. In other words, demons will see a person that's depressed, and demons will start projecting their images and thoughts to a person that's already very negative and already has a lot of negative self-talk. And so this makes it even worse, because now the person, along with his negative thoughts, now also has the diabolical negative projections in his mind as well. That's called fractured thoughts. And the only way to break that is by entering into a serious life of prayer and into sanctifying grace. And that'll help the person gain self-mastery of his thoughts, and it'll shut down the diabolical projections.
Mm. And Father Harrison, he ends the article by saying, regardless of those who struggle with gender identity still require the patient love of Christians to help them bear their cross and to encourage them to find the giftedness of being male and female. This is found through their body and sexual differences. He says real freedom can be found in the church's teaching on sexual difference and gender, seeing them as integrated but also malleable in terms of the appropriating certain characteristics of the opposite sex. Always respects the gifted nature of existence and of the body. Who I am is fundamentally received as a gift, not determined by my own whims and desires. Only in the law of the gift is freedom found. So,
amen.
It's a gift from God. So we
accept it.
Yep.
And Reuben, we called this program Jesus 911 because it actually comes from Psalm 69, verse 2, where it says, Lord, come to my assistance. Lord, make haste to help me. And this should be the prayer of everybody that listens to the show every single day. St. Father DePio says, pray, hope, and don't worry. Worry is useless. God is merciful, and he will hear your prayer. Wrap it up, Reuben.
Yep. We are in Advent now, so a penitential season. So let's do that. Let's treat it like we would be treating Lent. So we're doing penance, waiting for the coming of the Messiah at Christmas, the babe in the manger. So let's pray our rosaries. Stay to grace. Stay tuned for Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Mishuta. We are out 10-7.